Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. Guys, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Tom,
come on, that's pith. Keep going.
Tom is joining me today, and we've got a special guest for this evening's episode, Bruce Fitzpatrick. Bruce, welcome to the pod.
Sorry, that's a terrible joke. Are you trying to take a dig at the fact that I gallivanted off to play 18 holes of golf today at Ely just because I couldn't watch another pro stripe an iron off Crisp Taylor without wanting to go in?
Since we need to be pithy here, boys, so we're going to be really quick.
Hang on, since being in St Andrews, how many holes of golf have you played?
36.
Plus 9.
54. No. You played Castle and...
No, that doesn't count.
It doesn't count as a hole of golf.
Did you play Sunday?
You did, didn't you?
You played 72 holes. Interrogation. I don't know if anyone wants to hear this. More importantly, we are on the eve of the 150th Open Championship being played at the home of golf at St Andrews. I mean, it feels like we're just three extremely excited kids in a candy shop.
Can we just talk about the course then for a minute?
Perv out on course architecture and conditioning for
the condition of that course is a joke. Yep. I think it's the first time we've ever seen a golf course where they've lost the fairways before the tournament began.
They are so fast. They are rock hard and very, very quick. But so they've not lost them. If anything, they've found them. They've won here.
You two boys have been busy bumblebees. You did a podcast this afternoon with Eric Anders Lang, which will be coming to a pod near you soon. And while you were doing that, I thought I'd go for a course walk. So I went onto the course and wandered about a bit, ostensibly to take pictures of silly people that are stood on the 18th or having selfies, which is weird because how many people have selfies in the middle of the fairway on an eve of a major? Mm. It's mind-boggling that's okay, but it is because it's when St Andrews Public Park, essentially. But I can tell you from walking around, the R&A released the clag on the greens. It's firm. It's 148. It's firm, and it feels
just
to
for
me,
reference. Just
clag, you know, is everything, isn't it? I mean, like, that's extreme firmness.
So it's quite important that we just contextualize.
So for context, 2019, I believe, Portrush clagged at 119.
And that's right. So that's like,
so if you look up a clag chart, I'll stick it up on Twitter or something, or we'll put it somewhere. If you Google clag readings, basically, it goes like 100 to 110 is like decent playing surface. 110 to 120 is a little bit interesting. You've got a bit of bounce in the turf. 120, 130, it's quite hard. You've got to hit the shot really good to stop it. 130 above, elite players are struggling to hold a wedge.
Yeah, don't.
And you're at 148, so you're basically at as higher end of firmness as you get. The greens,
that
which are being
16,
watered.
That went up 16, I think it's millimetres, but that went up 16 mils in 2 days. It was 130 at the beginning of the week, and that's 148 on the greens.
That clegg hammer is laughing at anyone that said that someone's going to shoot 59 around this golf course.
I was going to say is that I walked across the 18th, walked across the first, I had a little feel on my feet, and I can assure you, although I didn't stand on the greens, so but I can assure you those fairways are firmer than the greens. They are rock hard, like absolutely rock hard.
And there's a little bit of wind going.
We've heard reports of someone hitting a 6-iron and 320 yards off the 16th tee. I think it's just...
Who's done that?
We heard about it down in the media centre earlier, didn't we?
I saw Lucas Herbert playing into 15.
Poetic, actually, in a way. This is the first major championship we've attended as the Cookie Jar, as a three, and Lucas Hebert,
left a fairway on 15, and as you know, there's those two bunkers that are sort of like at an oblique angle within the fairway, about 50 yards short of the bunker, short of the green. And he's probably got no more than 120, and I'm watching hitting these soft pitching wedge shots. He played four of them, no more than 3 or 4 yards past the second bunker, and his first two shots de-greened, didn't they? The green's 20 or 30 yards deep. That's an 80-yard run out from a 60-yard pitch shot. Yeah. I mean, it's so spicy. It's going to be so exciting. The only thing I will say is we've been out there today in amongst it, or certainly two-thirds of the jar have been, and it's really hard to get a sense for what's going on the ground. I think in the grandstand, you see a little bit more movement and what's happening with the ball and how the course is playing. It's the atmosphere, isn't it, really? It's not. It's going to be really hard to see a fat lot out there for the next 4 days.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's worth getting a seat in a grandstand and just watching a few groups come through, I think, to observe some of those themes that we've just picked out there, how firm it is and how fast it's playing and the difficulty in holding greens and getting the ball close. But, you know, I think some people might be quick to say, well, is this a bit Mickey Mousey? Is this really golf? I think it's a different style of golf to anything else we've seen during the year. And it's brilliant because, you know, we heard Tiger mention it in his presser yesterday. You've got to open your mind to so many different options and things like, you know, we've heard certain people out there try and simplify the game, hit one shape, keep it really simple. The top guys just hit it one way and just bomb it and keep it very repeatable and boring. And they get really good at that. And actually, I think you look at a course like this, when the wind picks up, you've got to be able to hold it both ways. You've got to be able to move the ball if you're going to have any chance of stopping it close and trying to give yourself a look at birdie with the fairways and the greens as fast as they are. And I think it's just going to be a really exciting exhibition of probably the two best skills in golf of shot making and elite lag putting.
But it's also pulling out some of the best crazy niche little points you're hearing. I don't know if there's a kernel of truth in any of this, but you know, I'm hearing players are putting in two options of 60 degree wedges with different bounce and grind options just so they can play different shots around the greens. I mean, today I've heard that two or three players from guys in the media tent saying have actually gone to a alternating sort of system with their shoes, i.e. their left foot will just have normal soft spikes, but they want to have metal spikes in their right foot.
For right
so they
player,
can get some purchase in the ground.
Because it's they're saying it was so firm and shiny.
Crusty.
The shiny was causing a bit of slip in that.
I don't care if it's right true, but it's like never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Yeah. You know? No, we've had reports. That's a real thing.
Barring an absolute deluge overnight or over the next couple of days, I think we're just in for a really exciting Open, and I hope this podcast ages well and they don't go and shoot 25, 30 under, but it just seems quite nice. It just seems really exciting and really poetic in a way that this is the 150th Open Championship. We've got weather that probably brings out some of the best aspects of this golf course. There's always a huge amount of faith in the weather kind of cooperating for the Open week, and touch wood, it looks like we could have a really, really exciting championship on our hands because of it.
So we've got a few predictions for day one only.
No, before we go off course, because I've got a bit from the Moral Cow's presser that I just wanted to discuss with you boys. It came out of the press conference. I'm still trying to figure out hole 12. I have no idea what to do. No idea at all. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can tell you 15 different ways to play it, and they could all be wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's six, I think, at about 7:10 this morning. So bear in mind, there's still a sort of hint of moisture on the fairways and everything still from overnight and the dew and whatnot. Watched Rory hit what looked to be a stock or even a three-finger driver, and he was pin high.
On the 12th.
Yeah.
That's going to be... They will all drive the 12th.
That's interesting. What, slightly puffing into?
Yeah, there was maybe a smidge against.
Yeah, that's...
He didn't look like he really launched at it.
Yeah.
But obviously there's so much run. I mean, if you can just play chicken with the bunkers,
they've cleared out a little bit of gorse on the left, which
was always
where
the big hazard,
Casey's undoing. But even still, I mean, as Morikawa points out, and particularly with how much run there is on the ball, the idea of just trying to caress like a high floaty iron up the... Yeah, you just don't want to do it. And
because the higher the ball goes, the more it can get it risks the bounce and where it can go,
I think you're going to stop it better with land angle. I mean, I think some of the high ball hitters, silly as it sounds for a links course, probably going to be able to control it a little bit better where it is really baked and the wind's not too much of a factor. But on a hole like 12, if you do just try and take an iron up the right, you're going to be going into the semi or first cut of rough, and with those fescue grasses, I just don't see how you're going to have any control on the ball when you're going into a green like 12. So I'm really keen to get out there and just watch some of it. You know, and I know we've said that some of the viewing angles aren't the best.
I think we should head to the grandstand.
I think you
want
to get up
tomorrow
early
morning
and just watch some
of
it.
If we get out early and head to the grandstand on 11, sit up there, you've got...
You can't
put
information live on air. Like we'd be, all of our fans would be flooding it. They won't be able to get any more people in the stand.
I think the RNA have already taken care of the occupancy in the stands. I don't think it really matters what the jar do. But I think that's an exciting corner of the course. Yeah. That's interesting what Mark Harris says. I think there's probably quite a few holes where they're going to be after rely on feel and intuition. But it's great. It's exactly how it should be. When people were playing with Hickory golf clubs over 100 years ago, the course wouldn't need to be performing at this level of firmness to incorporate this level of decision-making and thought and precision around angles and where they play to. So in many ways, the weather has kind of wound the clock back 100 years because it's not nullified the technology, but it has meant that now the distance it's going with the technology, it's a bit of an equalizer against all of that. You know what I mean?
So yeah, we're going to see some 400-yard drives.
Could we maybe look at a few predictions for day one then?
I don't want to pour cold water on what we have just said, but just in the interest of hedging our bets somewhat, there is a forecast for a little bit of rain. How much I'm not really sure. We did get a bit of a downpour.
You don't need to hedge your bets
earlier.
If someone shoots 59, no one's gonna take the course.
I just think in terms of how it's gonna play, like we had about a 3-minute downpour earlier which did half of Sweet FA, I think, to the course and the firmness, and there might be a little bit tomorrow and Friday, but it doesn't seem to be like it's going to affect it too much. In terms of picks,
I'm just thinking day one here, so I don't know. Round one leader.
It's Charlie Hoffman.
What hole are we going to see an absolute blow up?
Do you think?
Are we going to see an amateur storm away with this? Are we going to see someone rolling back the years? Is there going to be one of the old boys so. That
do
all of a sudden doesn't have the distance that all of a sudden might have? I don't know.
Let's confront it head on.
Do
Tiger.
Do you think Tiger is going to go the Hoylake 2007?
I'm going to put it out there. Tiger's going to shoot 2 under tomorrow or better.
Do you think he's just going to go irons everywhere and just outthink everybody?
I just think Tiger's just got a level of IQ that the rest of the field just frankly don't when it comes to playing this golf course.
I think he's 80-1, you know.
It's quite interesting how he kept so much close to his chest when probed about the golf course on the lead up to this. And I think he genuinely thinks that he's holding on to quite a bit of good information about it, and therefore
he's got an edge there.
Yeah, and you know, reports are looking quite fresh all of a sudden. Didn't look so good maybe Sunday. Maybe he's had a bit of a cold, feeling a bit rough from maybe some travelling or some few events. But I'm going to put it out there. Maybe it's heart overhead. 2 under or better for Tiger tomorrow.
I'd love to see that.
I mean, I'd love to see it. I think Tiger will be, whatever the score is, I think he'll be around the top. Certainly tomorrow. The thing about Tiger is going to be the stamina. Like, can he do this for 4 days? You know, we've seen him play well in the majors that he's played.
Like he's doing it well.
Yeah, seen him play well in the majors he's played too. He's always made the cut. It's not like he's an idiot. He's done some hard walks. Like it's been tough for him to do that. This is an easier walk. Still not super easy. It's firm underfoot, like we've been talking about. So it's not the easiest walk. But I think that he'll pat it round. I think he'll outthink everybody. He'll be more patient than other people, and I think he'll be somewhere around there. I do think it.
My only slight concern is just, has he still got the touch around some of those delicate wedge shots, and particularly with the putter? You know, there's been a few rounds where I think he was going quite well at the Masters and then had like 45 putts in the third round or something. And you know, he's great. One of his greatest assets around here was his lag putting, which was just of a different order.
I think that's a skill you're born with.
I think the lag
putting has gone nowhere.
Yeah, but part
is
of lag putting.
Part
of lag putting is not just the first putt though, but it's like tidying up those 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 footers.
Not lag putting. That's holding out.
Well, no, but you're going to by definition be leaving yourself some of those from if you've got 60-foot putts or 100-foot putts, which you can do on some of these greens. So, yeah, I think there's maybe a slight question mark over that. But, yeah, I'm with you guys. I think we'd all love to see him in the mix.
I'm curious to know if Mr. Popular, who played in the middle of the practice round today on his own, surrounded by ball balls, has benefited from the experience at all.
I'm talking to
Patrick Reed, who was out in his one ball self in the middle of what looked like some really nice jovial four balls. It's actually quite sad watching him walk down 16 today. He cut a bit of a lonely figure down there. Ironically enough, he's somebody who would be a really, really good shout to go quite well tomorrow. He's got a blisteringly hot short game.
Yeah, his short game's pretty elite, isn't it?
He's a really tidy player. Yeah.
Max Holmes says Patrick Reed's short game is pretty outrageous.
So. Yeah, exactly. So, and that, I suppose, the only other sort of pick on this I'd throw in would be Lowry as well. The most artisanal hands in the business.
Artistic, yeah. Yeah. I don't think too much of that. I think Rahm actually has some of that artistic flair that, you know, sometimes comes out as an expression of the environment that you put in, really. And, yeah, I think the same could be true for Rahm.
And Jordan Spieth. I think Jordan, he was one shot off in 2015. He's been playing well. He's gone through a particularly hard few years, but he's definitely out the other
coming
side of
the
it.
Other end of it, isn't he?
Definitely out the other side of it. And he's done, when he played here last time, he basically did zero prep. Didn't play the week before, hasn't played Lynx golf before.
Well, he played John Deere, didn't he, the week before?
Yeah, he was doing St. Andrews and simulators to practice. It's like, you just can't do that. Yeah. Like, the ground is not going to help you. No. So now he's got the experience, he's played it before, you know.
Mm. Is there much read on the draw? Morning wave versus afternoon wave? I'm not sure.
It looks like there's a bit of rain coming in later on.
Pin placement's being released at 10 p.m. this evening. Just a little knowledge bomb.
What do we think? I mean, this is going to age terribly, but I feel like the whole podcast could potentially age terribly.
You are terribly scared of getting anything wrong.
No, I'm not. I'm just definitely scared. We're obviously, you know, we're throwing out a fair amount of conjecture, but we'd like to think that we've made some validly kind of well-reasoned arguments as to why that might be the case.
We've got great form when it comes to picks.
Yeah, picks is just a fool's errand, isn't it? But in terms of pin placement, do we think the RNA is going to just say, let's just protect the life out of this for day one?
Yeah.
You think they're going to tuck them away tight?
I don't know. They didn't at Royal St. George's
last year.
Don't think they'll tuck them.
No, not
on day one. If they go silly low, like if someone comes out and half the field are 5-6 under, I think
there's a bit of nervousness around the fairways at the moment, and just the sheer firmness of the course all of a sudden that wasn't there maybe 3 or 4 days ago. They were throwing a lot of water on the course today.
Well, they're watering the greens.
They're watering the bloody bunkers, to be fair, at one point. They were throwing a lot of water on it today. I don't think they would be doing that if they were then going to start hiding pins in stupid positions, because they can always build up to that, can't they? Yeah. And I think it will naturally get more brutal as the week progresses.
But let's not forget, people have been playing golf on that land for like 400 years. And if this was now and there was no tournament, they wouldn't be doing any of this stuff and people would still get around the golf course. So it's not going to be unplayable.
Well, it's the whole nation of the old though, isn't it? It's hard par, easy bogey. You know, it's like it'll still be playable. It's just for these guys to get around in elite scores is going to be really tough.
Yeah. I think it's straightforward on quite a few holes to make par. The number of birdies it will yield will be the question,
yeah.
I think.
Well, imagine.
I don't know if it's
and like Peter Dawson said to us, he was like, I've always thought, what was the number he
make
quoted?
Six shots harder.
He's going to make it 6 shots harder with the pins.
And I think
that's up their sleeve.
Typically, you
want to
keep that up the sleeve maybe for later on in the week.
But like, if you think about just the. I know we were going to do picks, but we've gone back off onto the course, but that's fine. If you think about the first, if they get the first green firm. I mean, how on earth do you play that
2 yards on?
Well, because you either try and get as close to the burn as you can, and then you've got like a naughty little chip, which you basically can have no spin on, or you're going to have to lay back onto a firm green and just pray that it holds from like 100 yards. And if it doesn't...
Generate enough spin. Simple answer. You just need elite low point control.
Was it Baker Finch? Was it Baker Finch who played into the first and they only hosed half the green
and
or something?
Revved backwards.
They just revved back into the and if he was moved like 3 feet further, the thing would have just degreened.
They left the hose on.
That's
overnight.
The kind of stuff I'm all in on.
Yes.
Like, I think we could really nullify this Open Championship with
just
watered sheer
half
chance.
The greens, yeah.
But you wouldn't know where. Like, someone comes out at night like a ninja and like does it in a checkerboard style.
Yeah, to be fair,
sopping wet squares.
We're looking out the window at the RNA Clubhouse, like. We could go out there with probably a hose pipe from here and just leave one on.
We could just do like quadrants of the green and just sabotage this thing in one foul sweep. Of course we won't do that. We respect the game far too much.
What started out as quite a well-intentioned and I think highbrow discussion on this pod has descended into some veiled threats of vandalism on a golf course, which,
Can we go with any other, I'm just thinking, any other predictions for tomorrow, just in terms of, you know, because I always think you can play yourself out of this in day one. Very rarely the guys can, you know, win it on day one. So
it just doesn't happen.
You know, is there anyone here who's got the potential to just go and completely and utterly take themselves out of it. I suppose there are a lot of people with any big names.
I wonder how, like, obviously, the absolute sniper of majors himself, Will Zalatoris, you know, he's still young. He's not played a huge amount of golf over here, to my knowledge.
I don't think he'll play himself out of it.
Oh, no, I'm not saying he is. But do you think his game will travel well?
Is his lead wrist extension going to be able to deliver a wedge with the right amount of bounce into some crispy links?
Oh, this is where you're getting your own head.
I think Scheffler's someone who I'm looking forward to seeing how he's going to play, because
I think I can imagine he hits it too hard. I can imagine there's almost too much.
I don't know.
Someone like Bryson, for example, to me would stand out as somebody here that just could quite easily
the guys who haven't got
sign
massive,
up a 77 at the end of day one and be like, how the hell has he done that?
But he also
it's like
a good
fishing
thinker.
With dynamite. It's just not productive.
He's a good
at times.
Thinker, though. So he might.
If he thinks about the wrong stuff when it comes to links golf, he's all about. And I don't, you know, well, I'm not going to make this into a swing discussion pod, obviously, but he's someone who thinks a lot about the golf swing and the optimum delivery and the mechanics of how you move in a club through space and time. But I don't know if he is someone who is thinking about the challenge of links golf, because why would he? Let's face it, you know, he's not really played. He plays one event here a year, and he's been doing that for a few years, and this is going to be the firmest Open that he's probably ever played in. So
in
I don't know if there's any reason as to why he would be thinking about some of the variables that you need.
I think the point I agree. I just think the point I'm trying to make is I think there's only a certain level of power that you can actually ever need. Like if you've got 130 club head speed in the locker, you're never going to actually benefit from having it above 120, for example. So there's a whole load of players here that are going to have some power up sleeve that they're never going to need.
I think Justin Thomas might be a good shout.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how he gets on. Missed the cut at Renaissance. Maybe he's had a bit more time to prep. Feels like he's not really done that well in the in Opens of previous years. I don't know how many he's played now. It's certainly obviously a handful or so. And
of course, Matt Fitz. I know it's rare for people to win
back-to-back
majors, but his head is just so good. And now he's like He-Man with a club in his hand. It's like just gained 30 yards from absolutely nowhere. Shout out the stack system.
I'm going to make another prediction, and it's more of a hope that maybe we don't have... That maybe some of the rhetoric around LIV Golf that I think has been too heavy on the narrative leading up to this maybe dies down when we get into the cut and thrust of the game itself.
Yeah, I think so.
Because... You know, I don't know, maybe it's just sort of being here and being a bit closer to the action and stuff, but just seeing how much attention is put on the players on all things LIV, it's like we're here at the 150th Open.
How much pressure and attention is put on the players by the media,
asking questions
about LIV.
Justification.
And the players don't care.
No, they don't. And it's like
they want to talk about
and they're all
this.
Saying the same thing. And I think it's just a shame that that's where we've got to, where... You know, we're needing to ask banal questions where we know there's not going to be a straightforward answer for someone to write a 500-word article about LIV Golf that then satisfies a load of clicks. And I think it's a shame because we are, the course and stuff. You know, we could do this podcast for 3 hours and our listeners will be very grateful that we're not going to, but we could talk for so long about the golf course and the way it is and what a brilliant moment this is. I kind of hope that when we get into the cut and thrust of the golf that starts to drop off by the time this pod will be...
released, which is tomorrow morning, the first tee shot will have been struck.
First tee shot's at 6:40.
We'll get out by 5 a.m.
We're going to go early, but you'll have an hour before the first tee shot is struck. And I think all bets are off as soon as that first ball is off the tee. And I think
Paul Laurie, honorary starter.
Yeah, he's hitting the honorary first tee shot.
Honorary member of the RNA?
Yeah, as is Tiger and Rory. They've also been announced those three
this week.
So, yeah, I mean, Tiger, you can understand, obviously, three Open Championships, Paul Laurie, Nathan
Scott. It's
two
Open Championships for Tiger, isn't it?
No, he's won twice at St Andrews and once at Hoylake. Mm-hmm. 2005, 2006.
Yeah, you've got to be really careful when you're on a top-flight podcast like this.
Rory's an interesting one, having just won the Open in Hoylake, but I think...
Huge ambassador for the game. Interesting timing with it all, but, you know...
Read into that for another discussion.
Mindful of my previous point.
I think on the Tiger point... We obviously went to his press conference yesterday, Mills, and for all the discussion that people were trying to get out of him regarding LIV Golf, as you mentioned there, Sam, actually what I kind of took away from that, I don't know if you feel the same, Mills, but it was just how quite endearing in an almost geeky way he sounded about the Open and playing golf over in Scotland, and certainly at the home of golf being St Andrews. Just how much of a student of the game he is in terms of the golf history. He loves the anecdotes from the likes of Trevino and Jack Nicklaus, and he just seems to be deeply appreciative of golf on this side of the Atlantic, and Lynx golf in particular, you know, here in Scotland. And I just thought that was amazing, and there probably wasn't enough made of it in the
because they just wanted to write crappy articles, didn't they? But
I hope he did well.
It's weird because my first time at St Andrews was maybe a year ago when we came and did the film, which by the way is booming on YouTube. Thank you for that. You're all watching it again, which is good. But it's strange, and you kind of think when people say, "Oh, the old course is the best in the world," and you kind of just think it's lip service in lots of ways. But the more you study and the more you understand, it's like I think Tiger's studied it and understands it, and he understands that it is genuinely mind-bogglingly good. And he was like a little kid when he was talking about it. He was really excited.
Yeah, well, someone asked him, they said, you know, you've said that this is one of your favourite golf courses in the world. And
he stopped him dead.
He said, no, it's my favourite golf course in the world. Yeah. You know, it is my favourite.
Yeah. And I loved just in his eyes there, just like cold assassin eyes. And that's why it's so good, that it's almost like, you know, whether it's serendipity or whatever, that we've got the weather and that the course is going to be presented that way. It would have been such a shame to have had a juicy, heavy rain for 3 weeks and it softs, becomes nullified to a wedge challenge, and you get a Zach Johnson.
Well, I heard that Richard Mansell, former guest of the pod, I heard secondhand through his coach that he hit 14 wedges in the practice round.
Yeah, I mean that'll
help. He got putter on it from 100 yards on the 18th and knocked on the green.
Yeah. Did he?
From 100 yards, yeah.
So. But this was, I got told that yesterday, so this would have been the round before. But yeah, 14 wedges. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, I suggest we put a bow on it, gentlemen. And absolutely. Until tomorrow morning. The rest is left for speculation. But hopefully you guys are enjoying these short micropods.
We look forward to hopefully bringing you a couple more before the week's out.
One more question before we disappear. Bruce, where are you playing tomorrow?